For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to All My Best Friends Are Digital, a podcast about video games and the stories they tell. With me is Caitlin Bailey, the most prepared podcaster on this particular stream. How are you doing, Caitlin?
I am wonderful. How about you, Mark?
I'm doing well. It's a competitive field, but the judges came back and they've decided that you edged me out. So we're going to be talking about the games we've been playing lately. We're going to be talking about our retro game Echo the Dolphin and our gaming opinions on old school funware, aka Goof. We're then going to move on to our feature game, which is Super Mario Brothers Wonder. And then we're going to close out the episode, as we always do, by engaging in some shameless hyping of upcoming titles. So with all of that in mind, Caitlin, what have you been playing lately?
I feel like if you listened to the previous episode, you probably already know what I've been playing lately. And that is...
Call of Duty.
Yeah. Because that's very me. I've been playing Avowed and Monster Hunter Wilds. I'm not going to talk too much about Avowed because we already did, but I'm in Area 4. Characters continue to grow on me. Combat is getting a little tedious at times, but it's still good enough. It doesn't really affect how I feel about the game because I really enjoy the story. I like learning more about, you know, kind of the mysteries within it, and getting just to see how the story of Avowed unfolds has been great fun.
It's a bit of a slow burn in a number of ways about some of the things that they've been revealing in Chapter 4, and I've been very pleased. I agree with you that the combat, echoing what we talked about before, it's kind of just enough.
Yeah.
In terms of things. I'm surprised by how much my equipment has been changing. At a couple of times, I feared that I was going to be using the same weapons for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
But I was motivated to mix things up a little bit. And that was partially motivated by a desire to mix things up But it was also partially motivated by the desire to use the new toys that I'd found. So that was something. And just spending time with the characters remains a consistent joy. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing how and to what extent they tie up all these plot threads that have been developing over the course of the past few hours.
Same, yeah. So I picked up a rifle. I'd been using a bow until then, and I tried the rifle once, and I was like, ugh, no, this reload time is horrible, and I got rid of it. Or I didn't get rid of it, I just switched off. And now I'm using it again. I put some points into dex to be able to reload a little faster, and I really like how big the numbers are, so I might stick with the rifle for now.
Big numbers are good. I also like the ability to long-range snipe without having to play trigonometry in my head.
Yes, yeah, that's key. But yeah, that's Avowed. For Monster Hunter Wilds, I'm now finally through the full story, and I'm in Time to Make a Hat from Every Kind of Monster mode. So the hunts continue to be significantly shorter than they used to be. I have seen some people talking about how much easier the game is, and in some ways I agree, and in some ways I don't. I don't think that the monsters do significantly less damage in Monster Hunter Wilds. I still can be one-shot by the really powerful guys. I still can get chunked really hard by some of them. But because the hunts are so much shorter, I think you face a significantly lower chance of dying. So maybe that's like kind of the gist of why it just feels easier. But I love how fast the hunts are. It's no more, you know, spending 30 minutes to kill a guy in order to get one specific rare, material, and then you don't carve it off the monster and you have to do it all over again. It's like 5 to 10 minutes in and out. Didn't get it. That's fine. I can do this again. So I really like the pace.
The drops are semi-random in Monster Hunter games, right?
Semi, yeah. Breaking certain parts can help raise the chance that you'll get certain things. So, you know, like you cut off a tail. Yeah.
It strikes me as lunacy that with semi-random drops, you would want to have hunts take that long. By which I mean the older hunts of like 30 to 45 minutes. Do you know who I blame? I blame League of Legends. When I first tried League of Legends, I was shocked, appalled, and borderline offended that a game could take about 45 minutes. And now it's just normalized that a session of something can take that long. I come from the fighting game community, right? 5 minutes is long enough.
Yeah.
To determine these things. So a 5 to 7 minute hunt sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, it's great because you still get to see the monster do a ton of stuff. You still get to do a ton of stuff. But then it's over before it really overstays its welcome. So big fan of the faster hunts.
So how's your gear looking at the moment?
Oh, I am a pretty, pretty princess because now that I'm in high rank, I can craft. Well, first of all, I need to craft things that are actually good for my stats and my, you know, the extra skills that the armor gives you. But because I'm in high rank, when I craft a piece of armor, I also get the, quote, layered armor, which is the transmog of the Monster Hunter world. So naturally, I crafted all of the stuff that I thought was prettiest and I equipped it. And you can dye it and stuff, which is nice. So you can make, you know, two pieces that wouldn't necessarily go together. Look nicer together. So I'm a pretty princess, and it's wonderful. It's a true endgame.
Very telling and appropriate that you first talked about how your digital avatar looks nice, and then thinking as an afterthought, yeah, I might want to start worrying about stats now. Priorities firmly in check.
I know it'll take a while to get like my full endgame gear you know, all put together, but at least I'm going to look pretty while I do it.
Excellent point. How about the creepy-looking cat that follows you around? I saw a couple pictures of the cats in Monster Hunter, and I was unnerved. I kind of assumed they looked like the cat people in various Final Fantasy games. I was unprepared by the monstrosity that I saw.
What? They're just...
I'm sorry, is this slander?
Cats. They're just cats that stand on two legs, and they're cute.
That is not my impression of what's going on here. What are they called again? The race?
Felines? And,
felines. Okay.
But with a Y instead of an I.
Of course.
Yes. And the ones that follow you around are called palicos. Get it? Calico? Palico?
No, I get it. It's just... I don't know. There's something a little unnerving, I think, about their appearance.
Okay,
I don't know what to tell you, man.
I'm greatly dismayed, but I'll take it in stride, or I'll at least attempt to. Mine is named Lily after my late kitty cat, and she's got green eyes, and she's very cute. And I will just move past it.
Okay. I'm sure Lily looks great. Mostly it's some of the helmets that
I
think make the cats look very strange.
Yeah, there's one helmet that looks like a brain in a sphere. But the brain is cat head shaped for some reason. Like the brain's got little ears. That's weird.
Let me get this straight. You react with outrage when I say some of them look funny and you whip out the brain helmet?
Okay, but it's not the cat that looks terrifying. It's the awful hat that people put on the cat that looks terrifying.
Wow. Okay, sure. Fine, whatever.
But yes, some of the armor is really, really weird. There's one also that looks like an octopus and it like jiggles. It's a lot.
I've seen that one.
Yeah.
I find it unnerving.
Yeah. So, okay. I'm with you. If we're talking armor, yes. Some of the Palico armor is truly terrifying.
I'm sure if I played the game, I'd have occasion to see Palicos not wearing armor. But if you think that I'm confident enough my search engine skills to try to find an unclothed cat picture on the internet and not encounter something that's going to get me on a watch list somewhere, I don't know, man.
Fair enough. I can't fault you for that. So, yeah, Monster Hunter Wilds, gorgeous game. Characters look cool. The armor sets are cool. Monsters are really fun to fight. I'm really looking forward to the title update in April because they're going to introduce a new monster, or I think maybe multiple new monsters, including Mizutsune, who is a Monster Hunter staple and is very pretty and probably can make some really pretty hats.
Oh, what a beautiful, majestic creature. Think of the haberdashery I could get by dismembering it.
Hell yeah.
In addition to a lot of other things that I've been exposed to by osmosis about Monster Hunter Wilds, it is definitely the case that the internet speaks with one voice, and that voice says that the matchmaking is consistently terrible. And that the, just, no, I shouldn't even say matchmaking, just the online process by which you party up, because you'd complained about that, just seems to be universally reviled.
Yeah, it's, I don't know what it, like, I feel like there's enough multiplayer games out in the world now where there should be some patterns that companies can comfortably follow in order to make it easy to group up with your friends or with randos. And for some reason, some games, Monster Hunter included, just don't seem to be able to find like a good intuitive way. Like now, yes, I know how to join a lobby with my friends and join a link party with my friends and join an environment link with my friends, all three of which are different, by the way.
Okay.
The only thing you need to actually hunt together, like, is a link party, I guess. But you can also be, it's a lot.
So this is an issue that has existed in broader gaming for at least a quarter century. And I just looked it up. The first Monster Hunter was released in 2004. So this is 20 years now that Capcom has been refining this formula. You'd figure they would have made some progress by now. To say that this is not their first rodeo would be a colossal understatement. They've been running rodeos for two decades.
Yeah, and I mean, I can sit here and think of the ways in which it's improved. Because it has, like, it's, you know, if I am in the same lobby with somebody, I get notified. Actually, no, that's not even true. If I'm in a link party with somebody, I will get notified anytime that they post a hunt, so I can easily join it. I don't have to, like, I don't have to go to a quest giver and manually accept it like I used to have to. But on the other hand, I still think it could be way easier. Who knows? We're just not there yet in Monster Hunter technology.
Maybe they need another 3-4 dozen releases and they'll get it sorted out.
Maybe.
Well, I've been continuing in my cheapskate ways. I played a demo last year for a game called Mullet Mad Jack. And so when it came up on Game Pass, I was very keen to be able to play it in its fullness. So this is a first-person shooter that kind of sort of takes the timing conventions of Crazy Taxi and dials it up to 11. Because the theme of the game, it's a little confused, and that's a bit of an understatement. You play as a moderator, quote-unquote, named Jack Banhammer. And the idea is that humanity in the grim future is addicted to dopamine. And so he's constantly hooked up to his phone, and unless he gets enough likes, he will die. And so he's live streaming the process by which he's going through and killing these robots. And so he has you have a 10-second time limit, and every time you make a kill, you get more time added, subject to that 10-second limit. So you're never more than 10 seconds away from dying. And levels are very quick, roughly about a minute long, and you're just constantly pushing forward and forward and forward these long tunnel-like areas. You don't really have open rooms or anything of that nature, and you're just constantly under time pressure to go and kill. And whenever you take damage, your time limit goes down. So you can be brought down by damage. So your life bar represents both your time limit and your ability to take damage.
Okay.
So the theme obviously is kind of gonzo, satirical, grim cyber future. But that's one of my criticisms of Mullet Mad Jack. I wasn't expecting any sort of deep or interesting examination of anything. It's just that they completely lose focus in Mullet Mad Jack, and they just start swiping their satire brush around everywhere. And as a consequence, it's just very confused. I was reminded a little bit of my criticism of Senua's Saga, Hellblade 2, in that they just chose too many themes and couldn't really develop any of them. Mm-hmm. So we've already clearly got a satire of social media and you know, the idea of literally your life depending on likes. I'm like, okay, that's kind of cute in a grim kind of way.
Yeah.
We then get some corporate satire, some satire about inequality, some satire about AI. There's a weirdly sustained but confused bit about your search for meaning. And then there's a whole bunch of stuff about consumerism. It's all over the place. I never really knew where it was trying to go, but that's okay because it's mostly about the gameplay loop.
Yeah.
And the fundamental gameplay flow is exhilarating. This is a throwback to old arcade Twitch action where if you aren't paying very close attention, everything's going to fall apart. And when you're in the middle of a level, when you're in the, those like 45 to 75 second bursts of gameplay, everything is beautiful and smooth and thoroughly, thoroughly exhilarating. There are a number of structural problems, though. This is kind of like an indie game issue. It's got a bit of a roguelite structure. After every level, you get an upgrade. You can upgrade your weapons. You can increase your base time limit from 10 seconds to 11 seconds or something. And all of these are interesting and cool and fine. The biggest problem, though, is that if you die, you lose all your upgrades, fine. And then you have to restart from the last checkpoint, which is every 10 levels. But it does one of those terrible things where if you quit the game and restart from your last checkpoint, you keep your weapon. And given that I hated the default base weapon pistol so much,
yeah,
it was literally the case that my preferred difficulty level, it's one of those things where when you load up the game, the default difficulty level is not the recommended difficulty level. It's one of those cute things where the game designers are trying to wink at you and say, well, like, if you really want to play the game as we intended, bump the difficulty up a level. I tend not to like it when designers do that. Make the intended gameplay experience for first-time players something called medium or the equivalent, and then let us know if you... whatever.
Yeah.
But I can play on the higher difficulty levels with any weapon other than the starting weapon. But with the starting weapon, I have to go to sort of the middle difficulty level. And so yeah. I constantly feel this temptation to just exit out and reload. But I would be able to resist that temptation because typically a block of 10 levels begins with an unskippable cutscene or two.
No.
Or an unskippable tutorial level or two. And so consequently, I'd be there, I go through like five levels or something, so I'm midway between two checkpoints, I would die and think, okay, well, I can start again with a crappy pistol, or I can spend about 10 seconds in menus and then another minute or so through unskippable blather.
Mm-hmm.
And neither of those choices were what I wanted to do, so that was a serious quality of life difficulty. And sometimes the cutscenes before a boss were even longer than that. It was just the fact that you couldn't skip some of these things just boggled the mind. I cannot believe they would do such a thing, but indie games sometimes pull that stuff. It is what it is.
Okay. You mentioned that you get upgrades at the end of different levels. Are those all related to your weapon? Like, so,
no.
Okay. Okay, cool. But you do get to keep your weapon, but only your weapon if you decide to reload?
Yes. If you die and then immediately restart from in there, you lose everything, including your weapon. But if you exit out and then start again at a checkpoint for the menu and go through the non-skippable stuff of again, you keep the weapon that you had when you last clocked the checkpoint, but none of the other upgrades. That
okay.
look of incomprehension in your face, Caitlin, is an indication of the insanity that one must grapple with when dealing with Mullet Madjack. Some of the insanity they wanted, and then some of the insanity just came along for the ride because of weird UI decisions, and this is one of them.
Okay.
I have other minor criticisms. Like, if you're going to go for this kind of pace, and they do the pacing very, very well, I'm not sure that you want to have reloading. Like, the Doom games showed us, and this has been true of all the Doom games, more or less, that reloading doesn't have to be in your shooter. And sometimes if you want to maintain a certain level of freneticism, reloading is the enemy. And so just don't do it. And I can't help but think that with slight rebalancing, Mullet Madjack would be better. Because nothing's worse for me than facing a locked door or something. And in Mullet Madjack, the way you deal with locked doors is you shoot off the chains.
Okay.
And die because my time limit exhausted while I was just reloading my pistol so I could shoot off the chains.
Oh.
That doesn't feel super awesome.
Yeah.
On top of that, there's a fair amount of visual chaos that I think they could have cleaned out. Like, for example, there are a lot of traps that are on the floors that you have to dash past. One of them is lava, which is almost exactly the same color as the sort of neon yellow carpeting that adorns a lot of the "this is the correct path" indicia. I don't know if that was intentional, but it just felt like a strange visual choice rather than a deliberate design decision. But all of that having been said, the core gameplay of Mullet Madjack is really quite well done. I'm not a huge first-person shooter fan, and I'm not really into boomer shooters. I'm not really into speedrunning. And yet, this is kind of the boomer shooter speedrunning game for people who don't like to speedrun. I'm getting similar vibes from like Neon White.
Okay, yeah.
Neon White made speedrunning fun for me, even though it's not normally an activity I enjoy. Similarly, Mullet Mad Jack, just by virtue of how the gameplay is structured, makes me feel like I'm doing speedrunning stuff in an enjoyable way. And so getting some of the appeal of like having to shave an extra half second off of my approach in order to make sure that I just don't die. And that part is really cool. So a lot of the commentary I felt was confused and overdone and mm-hmm. kind of a mishmash. I really, really wish that they made the reloading process a little more straightforward and that you could skip all these cutscenes. But Mullet Mad Jack is really cool. If you have a Game Pass, you can try it for free. There's a demo that is pretty representative of what's going on. And I've been having a great time with Mullet Mad Jack. I'm going to be having finished the quote-unquote story mode. I'm going to be playing a lot more of the endless mode just to be able to bypass all that story nonsense that I can just complain about and just do a whole bunch of levels.
Okay, so two questions. One, which is the most important one, is there a mullet in Mullet Mad Jack?
Jack Banhammer sports a marvelous mullet, and at the end of every level, you are given a rating based on your various stats, you know, kill rates, the number of people you killed, and your rate of headshots and accuracy level. And the rating is always some kind of hairstyle, okay, which is more or less mullet adjacent. Actually, just a couple words about the protagonist. One thing that did actually land is that he's kind of a satire of Duke Nukem and a whole bunch of other action protagonists that Duke Nukem inspired. And this is evident in his one-liners. So some of Mullet Mad Jack's one-liners, I think, are actually pretty good as satire. One of them that I very much appreciate was, enjoy your own company, which is good advice. That's solid advice. He also encourages the player, don't go in debt, which is also handy advice.
Yeah,
as somebody
not
who,
bad.
Somebody who was kind of convinced by popular culture to buy a house and then immediately regretted it, I can definitely agree that going into debt is not a good idea. And he also has good criticisms of the game industry. One of the strangest sort of almost fourth wall breaking one-liners was, free games are often the most expensive.
Very, very nice. He sounds like a smart dude, at least sometimes.
I'm not going to validate his life decisions. Like, I don't know that I would have hooked up my bloodstream to a social media app that grades me based on, on likes for killing. I have not mentioned this yet. Your antagonists who are robillionaires. They are robot billionaires. This is not explained, really. Again, there's a lot of satire that kind of misses the mark because it's all over the place. But other than that, I mean, in terms of his nuggets of wisdom, I think Mullet Mad Jack has a point or two now and then.
Okay. Is there meta progression as well?
No.
No. Okay. So you just lose everything when everything except your weapon if you reload when you die.
Yeah. Every once in a while, you can unlock a new pair of shoes.
Okay.
That's it.
Is it just cosmetic? Do you look down and you see them? Okay.
He kicks open doors. He kicks enemies into rotating saws and laser traps. He kicks vending machines so as to get soda that replenishes his health.
Okay,
it's
very
purely
good.
Cosmetic. Again, very Duke Nukem. Duke Nukem was often kicking things, and so was Mullet Mad Jack.
Cool. All right.
And I suppose I'll just leave you with another bit of wisdom from Jack Badhammer, which is, make a new friend every day.
Aw, thanks, Jack. I think with that, we can move on to our gaming opinions on old school funware, aka Goof, segment, where we're going to be talking about Echo the Dolphin. Echo the Dolphin was released in 1992 and developed by Novotrade International for the Sega Genesis. So, Mark, what do you think of Echo the Dolphin?
I don't know, man. I think the stuff about Echo I find a lot more interesting than the game itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because I played Echo the Dolphin and it's like, I don't know, I'm not really down with this. And then I just kept reading about it and I'm kind of fascinated by it as a product and how it came to be and the things around it.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start with the game, I suppose.
Yes.
You played the game back in the day, didn't you?
Kind of. So I come from a Nintendo family. We did not have a Sega until the Dreamcast came along. But anybody I knew who had a Sega I would see Echo the Dolphin and be like, that looks so cool. I love dolphins. I'm a child. Not to say. I just realized how that came off.
You literally said, I am a child. That was part of...
Yes. Not to say you must be a child to love dolphins, but, you know, it was a part of the whole thing. But, yeah, so I would see it and I just thought it looked cool. I thought it was cool that there was a video game with an animal protagonist because I was a big animal kid. I liked animals. I still like animals. Yeah, so it was just neat to see, like, a dolphin instead of a person doing stuff.
We've talked about, like, even on this show itself, independently of your own preferences, I feel like we've talked about a whole bunch of games with animal protagonists. This is not, I guess it's a minority.
Yeah.
But it's not like you have to look very hard, especially the 16-bit era, to find a game where the protagonist is an animal or an anthropomorphic animal. Or is that it? Like, anthropomorphic animal doesn't cut it. You want it to literally be an animal.
No, it needs to be an animal. Okay. Anthropomorphic Fair animal enough. Does not count.
I see. Okay, that makes sense. I will confess here, fully and frankly, I've not tried Echo the Dolphin until now, despite the fact that, you know, getting into retro games, into emulation, it is one of the things that you do. You look at the greatest titles of the consoles you didn't own. And yeah. I was an 8-bit Sega kid, but I was a Nintendo 16-bit kid. Mm-hmm. And like you, I then jump back in with the Dreamcast. Rest in peace. The Dreamcast was a brilliant console. And Echo the Dolphin is regarded as one of the best Mega Drive games. And so, yeah, I played Streets of Rage. I played some Sonic games. I played a bunch of stuff that was there. And I never played Echo. And I have to confess, taking a step back and asking myself why. One of them is I don't find dolphins particularly interesting. Possibly because I'm not a child. I'm told that children love dolphins.
No, I'm sorry.
By noted marine biologist Dr. Caitlin Bailey, Esquire. But look, I'll be entirely frank. I think one of the things preventing me from trying Echo was a little bit of misogyny. Because I associate dolphin enthusiasm as being kind of akin to horse enthusiasm. Mm. And I associate that to a certain extent with a thing that particularly young women like. Okay, this is not reasonable. This is not fair. And it is one of the reasons why I have not engaged with Echo the Dolphin up till now.
So Echo the Dolphin is a girl game. Is that what you're telling me?
I unfairly kind of sort of maybe 5 to 10% made that association. Yeah.
Okay,
and
okay.
It's not a good association to make. And it's nonsense and it's garbage. And I just, you know, it's just a realization I made about myself over the course of the past week.
Yeah, it happens. It happens. We all realize unpleasant things about ourselves every now and then. Okay, so I set up my Sega Genesis for this. For Echo. I tried...
Your setup just keeps getting sweeter and sweeter, isn't it?
Yeah, so I tried to set it up because I also have the Sega version of Golden Axe. I tried to set it up for that, but then I realized that I couldn't find any of the cables. So I bought some cables. I bought some cables and had to wait for them to arrive. So they arrived in time for me to play some Echo. Okay, so... I started playing on our, you know, on our TV. I got a wireless controller for the Genesis from 8BitDo or 8BitDo, whatever.
Yep.
And it was great. I was able to sit on the couch and not have to be, like, you know, 3 feet away from the TV because of the length of the cables. Anyway.
Yeah, listeners need to understand that Caitlin is in possession of both a couch and a television that I would classify as, like, Pentagon grade. They are not messing around. Their couch game and their TV game is on point. And as somebody who has had to play something on Caitlin's television attached to a cable, I still think I have the sunburns from it.
Fair enough. I'm very sorry.
It's fine.
So, yeah, I started playing a couple days ago, and my husband is watching me. And after about the third or fourth time that I ran into something while dashing, he said that he would quit right around there about all these things hurting him in the Dolphin Go Fast game. Because it occurred to me that perhaps this isn't necessarily the Dolphin Go Fast game, even though that's clearly the most fun thing to do is go fast and jump out of the water and stuff.
Yep, yep.
But yeah, I did a dash in order to, you know, get out of the water and get some air right into some spiky coral that was like 3 feet above. And I was like, oh, that's stupid. And I feel tricked.
I agree with your husband 100%. There are two things that really keep me from enjoying Echo the Dolphin's gameplay. One of them is I feel this sense of empathetic pain because I just looking at a dolphin's nose, I don't even need to know anything about, like, apparently they have got a lot of nerve endings there. But even setting all that aside, ramming that skinny proboscis at high speed into a coral bank is not going to be a good time. And yeah. It happens so often in Echo the Dolphin.
So often.
And then there's this whole issue of speed and fluidity of gameplay. And mm-hmm. I think one of the this is not just because I've been playing Mullet Madjack, and Mullet Madjack works and sings because of the speed and fluidity of gameplay, but yeah. The obvious comparison set is another game on the Genesis, which is to say Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yes, absolutely.
If you were running into walls in Sonic the Hedgehog all the damn time, no one would want to play it.
Yeah, it wouldn't be fun.
And when playing Echo the Dolphin, I kept thinking, like, this is, like, during those 5 seconds where Dolphin go fast, Dolphin yeah. go real fast. It very fun. Then Dolphin run into wall and Mark become sad.
Yes. I didn't feel like the controls were super fun because, I mean, there's a couple things. If I'd been able to go fast and had an easier time controlling the Dolphin in order to either quickly change directions or avoid obstacles, I think it would have been significantly more fun. As it was, I'd be speeding up and like, oh, I'm going to hit some coral. Yep. Okay. There it goes. I took some damage. Great. And then I feel like you're forced in so many situations to go real slow in order to not hit something.
Back up, turn around, get the angle just right.
Yes.
Dash at the, oh no, didn't get it. Okay. Back up.
Getting the angle just right is so difficult, like much more difficult than I anticipated it would be.
Well, so there's the difficulty overall, which is one thing, and this is very characteristic of games of the ilk. Apparently, the creators were paranoid about people beating Echo the Dolphin in a single rental, and so they made the game more difficult. Mm. They went back and just made it harder just to avoid that, which, you know, is always the sign of a purity of game. No, I mean, yes. Like people all the time, with good reason, and I'm not saying they're wrong, point to a series of design decisions in contemporary games, especially AAA games, where it's like, okay, you did that because the suit told you to, you did that because the market wants it that way, you did that because you basically want it to be live service. These are all the market forces that drove your decision making. Market forces made people make bad game design decision back in the 90s too. And yes. The most common one was, oh no, we've designed a brilliant 4-hour game, we can't have that, we need to make it 15 hours by making it stupid difficult. And I'm sorry, one of the good things about the contemporary game market, and we've talked about a number of those games before, is that the contemporary games market can say, oh, that was a brilliant 4-hour game, well done.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, we might have some discussion about questions of cost and value, blah, 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 but whatever. You design the game you want to make, and Echo is another great example of, oh, we made the game we want to make, now we have to ruin it so it'll sell more.
Yeah.
This is not a uniquely 21st century problem in game design.
It's been with us for as long as video games have been with us, apparently.
But even setting aside the overall difficulty, it's just that Echo the Dolphin is at its most fun when it's fluid and fast.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have to back up and slowly reposition, it's not as fun or as cool. I think part of it is a hardware problem. Part of it is just that I feel the field of vision is too narrow. I can't yes. see what's in front of me.
I agree.
Dolphin didn't have to be in the middle of the screen. Like, you could have played fast and loose, and the faster you're going, the more out in front the camera shifts or something.
Yeah.
I don't know if they would have been able to pull that off with the Genesis hardware. But that would have been my preference, because I know every time I build up a little bit ahead of speed, just after the wee, I immediately then get like, this is going to come crashing down immediately thereafter.
Yeah, I mean, Echo the Dolphin, I feel, had all of the pieces necessary to be an incredibly fun game. And maybe hardware notwithstanding, I don't know anything about developing games for the Genesis, but it could have been so fun, and instead ended up where the fun bits would immediately be ended by something that was very annoying. I mean, the dolphin get hurt sound is not a good sound. And I was hearing it a lot.
I will hasten that at this point. One of the reasons why I'm not super enthusiastic about, let me be very clear, I'm not of the opinion that like tuna boats should be murdering dolphins or anything. That's not what I'm getting at. It's just, I've been hearing for decades claims about dolphins that are overblown. Like, oh, they speak with language. No, they don't. Dolphins don't have language. They communicate. They communicate. They're very smart and they communicate. Dogs communicate too. So do wristwatches. There's a difference between communication and language. All right. Mm-hmm. So setting all that aside. But I do kind of appreciate how the gameplay gimmicks in Echo the Dolphin feel like thematically coherent and kind of in-universe appropriate. Like how you don't really have a very good map, but you get a shitty map through Echo location. Hence the name Echo. That's kind of cool. I'm kind of okay with that. That's neat. I was a little bit worried about how the breath mechanism was going to shake out, but it's okay. It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't feel like I'm under time pressure because Echo's about to drown or anything like that. So some of the dolphin-y bits are actually kind of cool and do give it a sort of unique perspective in the action-adventure kind of genre. But it's not enough for me to overcome the often crippling difficulty and the fact that the movement just seldom feels very fluid.
Yes, and I also... This is one of the few 2D side-scrolling games that made me feel motion sick.
Oh, really? Oh, that's terrible. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, so I didn't end up playing Echo for too long because I was not... Okay, I never got to where I was feeling really bad, but I could feel it was coming. And I was like, oh, okay. And actually, my husband had to stop watching because he was getting motion sick watching it.
Oh, wild.
Darn. Yeah, I do keep thinking, though, how cool it would be for like a modern Echo the Dolphin. I think if they don't do it like the Dreamcast, where the Dreamcast also really made me motion sick, but that was like behind the Dolphin. I still think side-scrolling would be better. But I just think there's so much potential there to have a really cool game someday. And I have no idea if later Echoes, like there was Echo 2, I have no idea if that has the same flaws as the original Echo the Dolphin.
So there were a number of Echoes the Dolphin on the Mega Drive. My understanding is they all used more or less the same engine.
Okay.
And then there was the Dreamcast one, which I believe is the last one. There have been redos and redevelopments and modern remakes and things like that. But I believe that the Dreamcast one is the most recent iteration. And yeah, it had the third person behind the dolphin perspective. And so that would perhaps give you a better sense of speed and a better sense of what's coming up, but at the same time, exacerbate issues of motion sickness, clearly.
Yeah.
I just like a whole bunch about the production of Echo the Dolphin and how it came to be. So apparently the project head is this Hungarian guy who was possibly knee-deep in a series of conspiracy theories about how aliens had contacted with dolphins back in the day. He's played fast and loose with whether or not he thinks that this is actually a thing. I don't know.
No.
It's fascinating. Either way. I don't know. I don't care.
Okay.
I just think it's hilarious. This was their response. This was Sega's response to Capcom signing an exclusive deal with Nintendo.
Okay.
Specifically for Final Fight and a couple of other Capcom properties. And I just love the logic. This is such fascinating development. Like, okay, our competitors have signed an exclusivity deal with a Japanese arcade game company to make home releases on their console. What do? Let's get a Hungarian guy to make us a dolphin game, and that'll be the way we answer. I'm like, okay, cool.
That's how we get them.
It turned out okay. The game sold very, very well and is very, very highly regarded.
Yeah.
We seem to be more or less alone in not liking it, but it's just the leap of logic here is fascinating. So the cover... This is the last bit of weird Echo trivia that I discovered that I find hilarious. The American cover of Echo the Dolphin was done by Boris Vallejo. Do you know who Boris Vallejo is?
I don't think so. The name sounds maybe vaguely familiar, but I don't know.
Boris Vallejo is one of the most prominent fantasy artists in the Conan/Red Sonja variety.
Okay.
Remember when we were talking about Golden Axe and saying, like, yeah, there are chainmail bikinis, but it's not actually the end of the world? Boris Vallejo is the one who does the traditional form of the chainmail bikini, and he does it a lot. Anyway, so they had him do this dolphin, and the project lead of Echo the Dolphin has quoted it, has characterized this art as, quote, a macho-looking dolphin, end quote.
What?
Sure enough, well, he's kind of thick in chonkers. He's got, like, some muscles near the center that I'm not sure that a dolphin necessarily has. So when they got the Japanese localization done, they decided to get a completely different art direction, and they wanted to make a cute little dolphin. And I just find the juxtaposition. Go look up the two. I'll include links in the episode notes. Go look at the two cover arts. And go look at some of the work of Boris Vallejo. This is just a fascinating little bit of trivia. I had no idea that Boris Vallejo was considered for Genesis game covers. This is wild.
Oh my god. That's fascinating to me. Like, yeah, I mean, I guess it is kind of a swole dolphin if dolphins are going to be swole.
I think that dolphin does not skip fin day.
No, not at all.
Yes, Boris Vallejo has done some Golden Axe art.
Okay, that checks out completely.
I want the following mods to come into existence.
Yes.
I want to play as Gilius Thunderhead in an Echo the Dolphin game, and I want to play as Echo the Dolphin in a Golden Axe game.
Yeah, let's do it. Have a crossover. You're with me? Yep.
All right, sweet. We'll do it like the Sonic and Knuckles thing, where it's like an attachment to your cartridge. And
yes. Oh my god, I forgot about that.
Well, with that, let's take a break and pay some bills.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
And we're back. And now we're going to be talking about our feature game, which is Super Mario Bros. Wonder. Super Mario Bros. Wonder was designed and published by Nintendo in 2023. It features, I mean, I could try to describe it, but A, the Super Mario Brothers defy description, and B, you don't need me to describe them, you know what's going on. So this was for the Switch. I'll have thoughts about the Switch later. Caitlin, why don't you tell us about Super Mario Brothers Wonder?
So Super Mario Brothers Wonder opens with the characters going to, I guess, what looks like a party. Bowser shows up. I guess he doesn't kidnap Princess Peach this time.
He doesn't do that as much anymore. They've kind of toned that down.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because video games are all woke now, Caitlin. Can't even kidnap a princess anymore.
Ugh, unbelievable. Yeah, I have not played very many Mario games in recent years. So this is my first one in quite a while. I was very pleased to find that I could play Toadette, because I love Toadette. She's my character in Mario Kart.
Yeah, Toad's my character in Mario Kart as well.
So it's a side-scrolling Mario game. You do levels. The designs are good. There's some creative mechanics. There was one level in particular I really enjoyed that was half the level was underwater. And at one point you do something and it switches, you know, which half of the level is under the water. I thought that was very cool. And it's fine.
So for context, I think there's a reason why you haven't played a 2D Mario game in quite some time. The last 2D Mario platforming game was in 2012. It was the was a launch title for the Wii U. It was New Super Mario Brothers Wii U.
That long ago. Wow.
Yeah. The thing is, it's hard to keep track with Nintendo because they're constantly re-releasing their old stuff, sometimes with a new coat of paint and sometimes with a new gimmick attached or something. And I am very overwhelmed often with my revulsion for a lot of contemporary Nintendo stuff. Like, every time they tell me in a Switch game to shake something, I can't help but imagine some desperate-sounding executive saying, "Hey, remember when we launched the first Wii and everyone loved us for 5 minutes? Did you remember that? You want to shake the controller like it's a Wiimote? No? Oh, okay. I'll be over here." And it smacks of a vague desperation. Like, you're the leading console this generation. Just deal with it. We don't want to shake our controllers anymore. Does anyone... Okay, sorry, let me back up. Maybe I think I'm speaking for everybody. I'm not. Do you know people who are like, "Yeah, I can shake this Switch remote thing"?
No. I don't know anybody who does that or wants to do that or thinks that's fun.
Okay. On top of that, when it comes to 2D platformers, this is one of the many genre of game where the Joy-Con is manifestly insufficient. Like, people don't like using crappy analog sticks for anything, really. But especially for platformers. For platformers, what you want is a good D-pad, and the Switch doesn't have a D-pad at all. Nope. I am befuddled at people who rave about the quality of the Switch hardware, and then the moment you push back, and they say, oh, but nobody actually uses the actual Joy-Cons. They use their third-party controller. And I'm like, yeah, that's kind of a problem, isn't it? But setting all that aside, and setting aside the fact that if you breathe too hard on a Joy-Con, it will become permanently floppy and you need to get it replaced. Thank you, European Union, for smacking Nintendo around a little bit in court so that they actually have to stand by the... All right.
Yeah,
setting all that aside with difficulty. Getting past the Nintendo of it all.
Yes.
I will say that the gameplay gimmicks are easily avoidable. You don't have to shake anything if you don't want to. And I think that this is a return to form, in to large part, to like classic Nintendo game design.
Mm.
And I came in expecting it to be fine, and I felt my cynical, jaded heart to be won over by the relentless charm and quality level design of Super Mario Brothers Wonder. So clearly I'm more enthusiastic about this than you are, I think.
So I do have to say, the most enthusiastic I am about Super Mario Wonder is when I turn into Elephant Toadette and you lean down and she kind of like, you know, crawls and she wiggles. Like, she just jiggles. Yes. It's so cute.
The elephant character, I think, in terms of gameplay design is not particularly interesting, but it is made up for by the quality of the animations.
Yes.
I could watch the elephant characters get into and out of pipes all day. It's marvelous. Yeah,
it is marvelous.
And honestly, the initially I was a little disappointed by the different like suits, but it's important to remember that, generally speaking, the Nintendo games have had one quality suit, and then the other ones have been like various shades of not necessarily so hot. And it's more than made up for by the Wonder Flower mechanism that you alluded to. In every level, there is an eponymous Wonder Flower, and when you grab it, something weird starts to happen. And there's a lot of different possible things that it could be. There's various levels of impact that it could have on the overall level. And I constantly found myself eager to see what the cool thing was going to be this given level. And the level that you mentioned was indeed a standout.
Yeah.
What was once dry is now wet, and what was once wet is now dry. Much the consternation of the local flora and fauna may suddenly be flopping around on the ground.
Yep, the fish just being like, oh no, where did my water go? Yep, I completely, like, the Wonder Flowers were so cool. Like, every single time you get one, it just completely transforms the level in a really neat way, I think.
And it lets them flex around with cool things that could have been overused gimmicks if they had to design an entire world around them, or they had to design an entire power-up around them. But they're just, hey, I want to do, okay, in this level, I want the green pipe to move like a snake.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. Do that thing. It really gives you a sense of variety that I very much appreciate. I don't remember other even amazing Super Mario games having quite the same degree of moment-to-moment innovation in terms of the overall level design, even if the overall quality of level design was very high in the older ones.
Yeah, so I've rather enjoyed each of the individual levels. I haven't yet got to the point where I feel like I care about switching the different badges that the little prince dude can wear. Maybe it's because I just haven't found one that vibes with me yet. But, you know, I'll do one where you get a brand new badge and there's a, you know, some kind of gimmick associated with that badge and you have to use it to get through the whole level. And those are fun. But then I rarely have had an instance where I'm like, yes, I want that badge again because I think it's going to be particularly useful to me right now.
Yeah, I agree. Those strike me as more gimmicky than anything else. And I think it's partially because it's a hard thing to balance, right? You either design a level such that you need the badge to really do well, or you have to make the badges sufficiently inconsequential that you can get through any level with any badge.
Yeah.
And they kind of erred more towards the second, and for what it's worth, I don't really blame them.
Oh, for sure. I mean, especially with the number of badges that there are, I think it'd be incredibly difficult to make all of them feel great and every level, or even most levels.
I also think they struck a good balance of the amount of doodad collecting you need to do. So in Super Mario Brothers Wonder, it's seeds. And I remember that was one of the things that really killed my interest in platforming around the turn of the century and a lot of the early aughts. You know, the Banjo-Kazooie games or even some of the Rayman games where it's like, and now you must collect a certain proportion of the 732 doodads that are spread. It's like, and I just start falling asleep.
Yeah.
I just cannot be bothered. Here, a level might have somewhere between 1 to 3 seeds. You're going to get one seed for completing the level, and you may or may not find the other ones. But you may or may not need to find the other ones because the thresholds are reasonable.
Yes. I really appreciated that, too. When I first saw it, I was like, oh, my God, like, I need to hit a certain threshold. Cool. What level am I going to be, you know, beating into the ground because I can't find this one seed that I apparently need? Like, no. I, at least so far, have never had that problem. I'm able to get all of them organically just by going to every level once.
They've been doing the same thing more or less for all the Super Mario Brothers ever since the new Super Mario Brothers game, like the new Super Mario Brothers game for the DS, and since then has more or less had the same approach to progress gating, and I think it does a reasonably good job, frankly. And sometimes you get to spend some of them, and sometimes there's an issue of going for this as opposed to another, but overall they've struck a reasonably good balance.
I appreciate when I can go through Super Mario Brothers Wonder, quote, normally. I'm not having to significantly go out of my way. I want to do a general amount of exploration in each level, but nothing feels insanely hidden. It doesn't feel like, yeah, it doesn't feel like a job, I guess. It feels like it's fun. I'm able to get it organically just by going through the level than the way I normally would.
Yeah, I remember basically through something akin to muscle memory, where a lot of the secret level unlocks are in Super Mario World.
Yeah.
But at the time, going through, they were often not the kind of thing you'd be able to discover organically. And you needed to, someone needed to tell you how to get through that.
Strategy guides.
Strategy guides. And that's a legitimate approach, I guess. But I do kind of appreciate that Super Mario Brothers Wonder is just pitched at an easier level. I've never really been especially challenged, frankly, by the levels in Super Mario Brothers Wonder, unlike Super Mario World or even like new Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
But I don't really blame them. They're simple and they're easy, but they're seldom boring, which is good.
Yes.
Again, the level design is on point.
Yep. I completely agree. Yeah, I think for me, maybe Super Mario, like, side-scrolling games, or maybe Super Mario games in general, just aren't my type of game. Like, they just don't hook me the way a game like Avowed or Monster Hunter does. And I don't know why, and I think that's okay. I could still objectively say it's adorable, there's some really fun levels, creative mechanics. Like, I don't see anything to dislike about it, necessarily. It's just maybe not me.
For what it's worth, I agree with you. It hasn't really sunk its teeth in the sense that I feel compelled to go back.
Mm.
But while I'm playing, I do feel a sense of joy.
Yes.
And I do feel the eponymous sense of wonder. And it's the kind of thing where every time I load up a level, I'm keen to see what the Wonder Flower does.
Yeah.
But when I'm not actually playing it, it kind of fades in the recesses of my memory. And I'm more keen to see what Garrus and the gang are up to in Avowed.
Yes.
So there's that. This could be a demographic issue. This could be a hardware issue. If it were on a different platform, I might be more akin to go. But no, I mean it. I'm just being transparent.
No, I totally
really
get
hate
it.
The Switch. I don't like picking it up. I don't like turning it on. I don't like dealing with it.
So actually, while you were complaining about the controller earlier, I was having many of those exact same thoughts playing this early this morning, just because I was trying to do one of those like stomp moves where you jump up and then you stomp down. And it is so annoying. I was playing just on my Switch with the Joy-Cons, and it was not fun to try to do. And not having the D-pad, just having that crappy, like, I don't know. It was all very annoying. I think it would have been significantly better if I'd been playing with an actual controller. But I was not, because I was just sitting in bed. And I don't have custom. Like, I actually know that they have, like, not Joy-Cons that you can buy from other people.
Yeah, third-party attachments.
Yeah. Yep. I don't have any third-party not Joy-Cons, so I was stuck with Joy-Cons, but it is what it is.
I have 3 incredibly petty remaining concerns
okay.
about Super Mario Brothers Wonder. Number 1, I find the caricature of particularly Italian-American speech to be vaguely discomforting.
Okay.
Vaguely. I'm not going to go to the ramparts over this. I'm not saying it's offensive. It's just making me a little bit uncomfortable and a little bit more so as I get older. Number two, why do they keep inviting Bowser to things? I get it. Like, he wasn't invited to this party, whatever. But I just know that in 5 hot seconds, they'll decide to, like, play go-karts or laser tag or a board game or something, and they're going to invite him, and I don't get it.
They are.
And I find it a little creepy, where they're like, hey, we invited Bowser to the movie party, to the watch party later, and Peach is like, you realized he, like, kidnapped me 12 times and tried to kill you a whole bunch. Like, ah, we're over that. Fine. Are we? Are we really? Finally, and this is the most, in many ways, the most petty, but also the biggest impact on my playing experience.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing in the Super Mario Brothers universe speaks cogent, coherent English, broadly speaking. You only get these little snippets like, bye-bye, or wee, or it's-a-me Mario, or whatever.
Yeah.
And then there are the talking flowers that just speak straightforward English sentences. I don't think they sound like they belong. It pulls me out of the universe every time I hear them say anything. Am I alone?
No, I completely agree. I was like, oh my god, is that flower talking to me? That's weird.
Like, like, it could make noise. It could even make noise the way the other humans make noises. But it's like in a universe where everyone is speaking Simlish, and then someone shows up speaking the king's English.
Yeah.
And they're like, something weird's going on here.
It's like, yeah, do I need to rescue the flowers? Are you, humans who have been transformed into flora? Like, what's going on here?
It just doesn't fit with the universe. I don't understand why they did it that way when they could have just made them have the same, like, adorable gibberish that all the other characters utter.
Same. It's very strange. It's a little bit like, oh, I don't know if I like that.
Okay. I'm glad I'm not alone in this.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm going insane every time I hear them speak. It's like, this doesn't sound like Super Mario to me anymore.
And then, for me, I guess there's one last, like, small little thing that I want to mention, which is at the end of each level, after you, go down the, you get the flag, whatever, hopefully you get wonderful rating, and then you go and you talk to the little not-a-toad guy. I forget what, they're, like, some, not flowers, but different plant dudes, I think.
Right.
In each of the little houses. And that sequence just feels like it takes 10 minutes to me. I know it doesn't actually take that long, but I'm just like, oh my god, let's move on. I want to go to the next level. I don't want to be sitting here talking to you.
Wow. I did not have that reaction, but okay.
Just like, I don't know. It was like, I was just getting impatient. I was like, yeah. Give me this, the seed, so I can go get another seed in another level. Like,
you will hunt a monster for 40 minutes because you want to turn its toenail into a cape. But the 3 seconds between Toadette pulling down the flag and going to the loading to the world map is too much for you?
Yes. I can't explain it.
Sure. Like, that's fine.
I'm like hitting start. Or like B, or like...
Plus. You mean plus, I think you mean.
Oh, yes, of course. Plus. Yeah, you can't skip it.
All right, sure. Look, after how accommodating you've been and how tolerant you've been of my many very, very strange objections to things, I will support you, Caitlin, in wishing that there was a way to skip those transitional scenes.
Thank you.
Well, with that, let us move on from Super Mario Brothers Wonder to some shameless hyping of upcoming titles, what we here call Shout. Caitlin, do you have anything to shout out for us?
I went over to Game Pass in order to start up Avowed, and I believe I came across this other game called South of Midnight. It's coming out April 8th, and it's going to be on Game Pass, and it's an action-adventure game set in the Deep South in the U.S. So I have no idea if it's going to be my type of game, but I was intrigued by it taking place in the Deep South and involving some mythology that isn't typically explored in a lot of media, especially video games. So I thought it sounded cool, and especially since it's on Game Pass, it will not hurt at all to give it a try when it comes out. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
Sweet.
How about you, Mark?
So Dotemu is responsible for one of the greatest beat-em-ups, and it is a recent one, namely Streets of Rage 4. And they have been showing off in a variety of trade shows their roguelite beat-em-up that is going to be called Absalom. And I am very much looking forward to that. It is super stylish, as you would expect from Dotemu, with really well-animated 2D art. I love beat-em-ups. I love the roguelite structure. And so I'm very keen to see what else Dotemu has in store for us.
Yeah, this looks really cool. I mean, I'm enjoying the art style. If nothing else, it looks pretty.
Yeah, Dotemu knows how to make a pretty 2D
yeah.
game.
Nice, it looks exciting.
It's supposed to be out later this year. I don't know when. Looking forward to it.
That's it for this episode of All My Best Friends Are Digital. If you want to support us, you can check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/ampfad. I hope you all have a wonderful week, and we'll see you next time.
Take care, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to get in touch, you can reach us at allmybestfriendsaredigital@gmail.com. Hope to see you again soon.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save.
$20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.